Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Well, hello, everybody. No Andrew this week because he's at the CPAC conference, you know, getting his MAGA and MAHA on. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you said CPAC, I was thinking, what is the machine that people wear when they have sleep
CPAP?
Apnea? CPAP.
That was exactly what I thought, too.
He's at the CPAP conference, sleeping like a baby.
I kid Andrew. He's at the Adepticon convention, painting miniatures and wargaming all weekend. So we lose him every year this time of year. So hope he's having a good time out there. But guys.
I don't hope he is. I hope he's having a horrible time. He could be here having a great time with us.
I want sweet Andrew having a nice time. So.
Yeah.
So I know I saw Project Hail Mary last weekend. I know Wayne saw Project Hail Mary last weekend. But Paul, have you seen Project Hail Mary?
I have not actually seen Project Hail Mary yet. I have not.
What is wrong with you?
I know.
You are breaking Ryan Gosling's heart.
Well, you know, for what it's worth, I think the next movie that I'm going to end up seeing in the theater, I don't know, maybe I'll see Project Hail Mary before then, but probably the next movie I'll see in the theaters is the Super Mario Galaxy movie.
Well,
you know, they announced this past week that it's going to have Star Fox in it, which I'm very excited about. Star Fox was my favorite Nintendo property as a teenager, so I'm very excited about this news.
You're choosing that in theater over Project Hail Mary.
I don't get
Star
it.
Star Fox, Wayne. Star
I mean, though,
Fox. It's Star Wars, but with a fox.
You know, go track back to Paul's, you know, previous takes on movies and how he did not enjoy Superman. How, you know, he's kind of got a problematic past, you know, with things he likes versus what he doesn't like. And I just have to say, I think that Paul hates good things. That's what I think.
I'm going to say something just to hurt you guys. Just to hurt you right now.
Okay.
I haven't seen The Martian either.
God. Wow.
I know. Friend of the podcast, Andy Weir. I'm sorry, but I've not actually seen The Martian, the movie.
You know, I bet our interview file, Wayne, isn't lost. It was destroyed by Paul.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I don't know why, but like space movies, despite my love for the genre, for some, like, I haven't seen Interstellar. I haven't seen The Martian.
I haven't seen Interstellar? You'd love Chris Nolan.
No, I even like, I like him. I love him most times. But yeah, I haven't seen Interstellar. I don't know what's wrong with me, but something about space movies, I just haven't had a chance to see them. But no, I haven't seen Project Hail Mary. That's why I'm looking forward to hearing from you guys if it's as good as everyone says it is.
Yeah, I think it's. It is the best movie I've seen in theaters in a very, very, very long time. I walked out of that movie with very, very minor complaints. Not even really complaints, just things that I'd wish that they had done differently. But I got to tell you, from tip to toe, it was intensely entertaining. It is so challenging to have a movie where you've essentially got one character talking to himself through a huge chunk of it, right? I think of movies like Castaway and, you know, other sort of lone survivor sort of movies. And, you know, those are really hard to do. They work well in written form because you can be up in a character's head really easily that way. But, you know, there are times when, you know, the self-narrative doesn't really work out. Right.
Especially when so much of the book is driven by it. And they did find a way near the latter half of the movie to kind of bring some of that in.
Right.
Where he's recording a message to send back. That was a way for them to get some of the inner monologue out without it sound being, you know.
Yeah.
Without him coming off as crazy.
But the movie is, number one, it's wildly charming. And you know, that is aided by a supremely charming story. This is right in Andy Weir's wheelhouse as a novelist. You know, we found that in The Martian. We found that in Project Hail Mary. I have not read Artemis, but from everything I've ever heard about Artemis, not the same kind of story because it's not the same kind of character. But
so I love Andy Weir. I love his short stories. I love The Martian. I love Project Hail Mary. I hated Artemis.
Yeah, and that's why I haven't read it, because I've heard so many things about it. But, you know, we know that this is, you know, a really strong point of Andy Weir. So when you started working off that basis, you know, and you attach someone like Ryan Gosling, who's just incredibly charming on screen, and then you get the creative team for the Spider-Man multiverse animated films, you know, the Miles Morales films involved in this, and they have got such an optimistic, hopeful bent in the way they make story, and it just aligns. And they made so many excellent choices in the building of the film, the fact that they constructed the sets. This isn't shot in the volume, right? It's not a CG movie. Even the alien character Rocky is a puppet. And I mean, there is everything wonderful on the screen is real. It's tangible. You can touch it. It is amazing to me how well produced, directed, written, acted, the soundtrack. And this is what I hate for all about not seeing it in the theater, is that the sound design in the movie is so important to the storytelling in the way that Rocky the alien communicates. It is extraordinary. It is rare that I find a movie that requires to be seen at the theater, and this is one of them. I loved it from tip to toe, like I said. And I'll point out, my wife, who is not a genre person and who is kind of dreading going to this movie, loved it. She loved this movie.
Yeah, from a book to movie standpoint, I think this is the closest adaptation I have ever seen, in that I had less than a handful of things that were actually changes versus omissions. They looked at the book. The book is very hard sci-fi. They pulled all of the hard sci-fi out and focused on the story that was there. And they actually translated the book without making major changes.
Yeah.
They changed the ship design, and that was for a number of reasons that I understand. Part of it being they were making a movie and they needed to have them be able to, you know, be on sets a little better.
Right.
And there's also a Lego kit of the ship that I need to pick up. One thing I found they changed very mildly, I love the book, but the book's ending to me has always felt rushed.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you have one set of pacing for the entire book until the last chapter, and then that pacing is completely thrown out, and it felt like they skip everything I wanted to see and go right to what felt more like an epilogue than an ending. I didn't feel that in the movie. In the movie, I felt like the ending flowed better than the book.
Yeah, I felt like the brilliance of the movie is in the adaptation of the novel, in that it was the spirit of the novel, not word for word. In fact, my only real complaint or change I would have recommended to the film was that they just didn't emphasize enough that Rocky was essentially blind, right? You know, he doesn't have visual acuity. And, you know, how, you know, certain things slip by his people because they can't perceive those things visually. And that was really clear in the book, and it's less so in the movie.
Yeah, I like how we saw how he sees with that visual effect of the echolocation.
Yeah, it was like Daredevil.
You know? Yeah, I thought that was done really well. I thought his adapting thing that lets him see screens by making him raised, I thought that was done really well. There were so many things from the book that I wish they would have found ways to adapt.
Same.
And a lot of that gets into the parts you were talking about, the Grace learning the science of the other species, how and why they evolved the way they did. They have throwaway lines and they have things on the whiteboard to show that all of that happened, but they don't put it on the screen. Mm-hmm. He mentions how he has to explain radiation. but they don't actually show that conversation and him coming to the realization that Rocky's people don't know what radiation is.
Right.
And you have to then wonder, how in the world could a species that made that ship not understand?
Yeah. Well,
in the book, you have the reasons for all of that. You don't get it in the movie. So that was the one thing I felt was lost, was as someone who really enjoys the hard sci-fi in the book, I do wish they would have brought in a little more of the science. They did a great job in The Martian of deciding what they were going to keep and what they were going to cut. And I don't think they kept as much science as I would have liked, but they kept the story and the heart of the story. Mm-hmm. And as just a movie to enjoy watching, it was brilliant. I've been talking about it for a week.
Yeah, same. I absolutely love this. And I got to tell you, it fills me with hope to see the Gaz in Starfighter, the new Star Wars movie coming out next year, because he really held the screen. I thought he was just marvelous. I really thought he was marvelous on screen. So, Paul, you're missing out. I can't.
I know. I do want to see it. It's not that I don't. I just haven't had a real opportunity for a 3-hour movie.
It's two and a half. It's 2.5, Paul. Yeah,
you know how the trailers are.
that is true, but your priorities are just mistaken.
Yeah, wildly skewed. Wildly skewed.
Well, I mean, you know what else I haven't seen?
Use that time to watch Marshals, Paul. I mean,
I've only seen the first two episodes.
Yeah, that's two episodes too many.
Yeah, well, you know, I also saw 6 episodes of The Madison this week.
You know, I feel like The Madison is really sort of in continuity with Monarch Legacy of Monsters, because Godzilla doesn't show up on The Madison either.
You know, it's been very confusing for me this week, because everyone who hired Kurt Russell over the last few years decided to release their products with him over at the same time.
In the same 2-week period, yeah.
In the same 2-week period, because, you know, he's very much alive and monster fighting in Monarch, and very much not alive in the Madison. And so it's like, but the thing about Kurt Russell, and I love Kurt Russell. I have loved Kurt Russell all my life, but especially at this point in his life, Kurt Russell plays Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
And so the two characters are, other than their clothing, not dissimilar at all. So it's like, oh, okay. I'm a little lost. He was just fishing. He was just fly fishing, and now he's in the MonsterVerse, though. When did that happen? Yeah. We saw The Madison this week. You know, it is. Jen,
and how many episodes have you watched?
All 6.
Oh wow. Okay. So you've watched the entire first season.
Yeah, for those who have started The Madison or are about to start The Madison, get through episode 1 and are wondering, okay, where does this all go? What's the conflict? Those types of things. I will tell you, nowhere. It goes nowhere. literally the whole point of The Madison is exactly what you get in the first episode. It is a grieving family dealing with the loss of the patriarch. That's all that happens. No one's coming for their land. There's no villains other than grief. It is 6 episodes of exactly that.
You know, everyone touted this it was going to be an exceptional series because Taylor Sheridan actually wrote this one, as opposed to him not writing Marshals.
I will tell you, this would have been an excellent 2.5-hour movie. You know, especially with the acting and the directing, it would make for an excellent movie. But it's already been renewed for season 2, and I'm like,
yeah.
But why?
They're already shooting season 2.
Yeah. I mean, again, it is beautifully filmed. It is well acted. It's just, you see Taylor Sheridan's name on a product and you assume, you know, conflict and battles and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it's not that. And again, it is made for a certain audience. Like I said, Jen loves it. I watched it. I thought it was fine. But I think perhaps my issue is that I was waiting for something that is not what that is, right? Like the whole thing is about this beautiful land out in Montana, and Montana, and I was like, okay, there's the whole conflict is that someone's going to come for this land and they're going to try to put a casino on it or some shit, you know, an airport. you know, I thought that's where it was going. And it, at least in season one, it did not go there. You know, it really was just a study of this family dealing with the grief of the loss of Kurt Russell's character. But again, I mean, it's, but on the flip side, you've also got garbage like
Monarch, like Legacy of Monsters.
What? No, I liked Monarch. You don't like the second season?
The second season is killing me, Paul. It's killing me.
Well, let me be clear. I'm only one episode in on the second season, but I quite enjoyed the first episode.
Like four episodes in. I like the first episode as well. It's the rest of the stuff that I'm not caring for. And the reason why I don't care for it is I don't care about the political maneuverings between Apex and Monarch. Don't care at all. I really don't. I care about the monsters. And... Yeah. You know,
well, you know, Aaron, there's only so much money.
I know. And but don't create a show called Monarch Legacy of Monsters and not give me monsters in the upfront. You know, don't I want to see the great big, you know, Titanic creatures wandering around in the background while people are solving problems. I don't just want to watch people solving problems. You know, it just frustrates the hell out of me. I'm like, you know, I can watch this stuff on literally any other streaming show. I can watch The Night Agent that does it better. I can watch, you know, Reacher. I can watch any of these other streaming episodes that are much better than Monarch. Give me the monsters. Figure out a way to make that work. And I'm just highly frustrated by it. And, you know, I feel like we went to all this trouble to, you know, reunite Kurt Russell's character and, gosh, I'm suddenly drawing a blank on her name, the doctor lady, I can't remember her name, but,
oh yeah,
you know, we got them together and then there's nothing going on. There's a lot of, I kind of think that that guy's her son, his son, you know, I kind of think Kurt Russell and her.
Yeah, I feel like that's what they keep hinting at, but.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm four or five episodes into this season. And I'm like, okay, I could care less now. I really don't care. I just am frustrated by it. I think that the first season was just so much better. So I'm done bitching about it.
Poor Matt Fraction. He just wants to give you a good show.
It does put me in mind. I love, one of the things I think that really works is, you know, Kurt Russell playing a character his own age, and then his son, you know, Wyatt Russell playing Kurt Russell at a younger age. I think that's great. I need to see Wyatt Russell be Jack Burton in a Big Trouble in Little China movie because I so need another Big Trouble in Little China movie. I'd be really excited about that. And did you hear the announcement that John Carpenter is making a sequel to The Thing?
Yeah, you know, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I get you.
I mean, I genuinely will believe it when I see it. And I feel like, especially now with Wyatt Russell, you could make a direct sequel to The Thing. Like, it doesn't even need to be,
completely agree.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be a flashback. So much like his dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with the beard. With the beard, they, you know, he very much looks like Kurt Russell.
And I think that's what they ought to do.
I think so too.
It shouldn't be a, let's, you know, find, you know, old Kurt Russell walking around and, you know, go from there. Let's you know, use Wyatt. I mean, I think we should use Wyatt for all of these wonderful movies. You know, he could be another Snake Plissken, right? I mean, you know, we could have, you know, Escape from Detroit, you know.
I like it. Escape from Detroit.
I am curious if either of you have watched Welcome to Derry.
I have not.
I have. So I quite enjoyed it.
I just heard about this show this week. I have not watched it, but I find the idea of it fascinating. So, Aaron, it is Derry, not like milk.
It's the It prequel, the Stephen King's It prequel.
It is the It prequel, but what they're doing with it is each season is going to be a different era. So in the It, he talked about it hitting basically, this is what happened when, you know, the last time that it showed up and the time before that and the time before that. Well, the show is working its way backwards with it, with each season being one of those times that it showed up in that town. And
it's every 37 years, right? So each season's going to rewind 37 years. And so how far are you in it, Wayne?
I haven't watched it at all. I just learned about it 2 days ago. And it just...
Okay, so I definitely think it's worth watching, because basically what they've... Pennywise has, they've done the Dr. Manhattan of as it relates to Pennywise. So he basically lives all times simultaneously. So like he makes reference to things that happened in It while they're happening 37 years earlier in Welcome to Derry. So it's, you know, it kind of takes on that. But I actually think, I mean, for what it's worth, if you don't like Stephen King's It, you're not going to like Welcome to Derry. It's very much cut from the same cloth, but I thought it was a good show. I quite enjoyed it. It's definitely worth checking out if you like that movie.
Yeah, I heard like he aims at one of the girls in the movie, or one of the girls in the show, because her son survives him in the movie.
Yeah.
Things like that I thought were nice little touches that make me want to watch it.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. It's on HBO Max.
Well,
so, it's directed by Andy Muschietti, who directed The Flash, and I guess is directing The Brave and the Bold. So,
well, I don't know.
Sorry.
Another show worth checking out was season one of Star Trek Starfleet Academy. I think that by and large, every single episode was really strong. There was one weak one, but I think by and large, it was a really strong season.
Yeah, I'm going to confess something to you guys.
You haven't seen it.
Oh, no, I saw the first episode. Uh-huh. I'm not going to bother now because they've announced this week that season two is the last season. So, like, I'm not going to get invested now.
I am really bothered that they announced that before the second season, you know, airs. I mean,
because people like me just won't bother with it. So it actually hurts the ratings, doesn't help.
Agreed.
Yeah. But, like, in my case, I thought the season finale of the first season was so good, so well done, and wrapped things up in such a way that if they'd have come back and said, this is the end of the series, I would have left satisfied and recommended the series.
Yeah.
So I have hope, since they recorded season one and season two basically right after each other, that they did the same. And even though it's not going to have a season three, if they end season two as well done as they ended season one, it is going to be a standalone show worth watching, despite only getting two seasons.
Yeah. Clearly this is because, you know, Skydance Paramount is looking to refocus Star Trek into films. You know, I think they have come to the conclusion that you can't successfully run Star Trek on TV and have a blockbuster movie. So, you know, my thing is I think Star Trek is better suited to television than it is to film, because, you know, Star Trek isn't Star Wars. It's not a big run gun shoot 'em up. It's, you know, science fiction. It is, you know, thoughtful. It is intellectual. You know, it is a, you know, when done right, it's a metaphor and a commentary, you know, what's happening around us. That's not usually your major motion picture. And, you know, I think the wear and tear that we saw on the Kelvin Universe films with Chris Pine and his crew, you know, yeah, that first movie was great, but it showed the wear and tear as it went along, because all it was doing was rehashing stories. I'm disappointed because it feels like with a few one-offs as the exception, Star Trek had finally found its footing in telling stories that didn't drive me batshit crazy. I really enjoyed Star Trek Academy, and, you know, I'm built to not enjoy it. I really could care less about what a bunch of teenagers are doing, but I thought they managed this really well, and they did a great job casting this show, and they actually had writers who loved Star Trek and have enjoyed Star Trek. You know, Tawny Newsom's on the writing team. You know, it wasn't the writer's room that they had for Discovery. They had for two seasons of Picard. They had people who actually knew and understood Star Trek and liked it, right? Well, they weren't trying to make it something else.
And not just that, every character went through an arc, and the characters, most of them, at the end of the season are not the same character that they started at the beginning.
Yeah.
They actually grew and changed in significant ways in how they interact and how they look at things. I appreciate character growth, you know, in any series, but especially here, it just, so much of the show worked, and yet it got so much hate.
Yeah. And I, you know, it cracks me up that, you know, people were bitching about how well Starfleet Academy is. And yet I'm like, you know, I felt like the political awareness of the show was toned way down from Discovery. I felt like certainly there was a lot of I don't even know how to say it. There was a lot of, you know, like the gay Klingon, right? But what I liked about him being gay, unlike Discovery, is that it wasn't a big deal, right? It wasn't, you know, you didn't have people like talking about being seen and whatnot in show. You had, it was just, hey, I'm a Klingon and I'm dating this guy. I'm a Klingon guy and I'm dating
it. It was just an aspect of the character.
Which is how it should be, right? I mean, that is how it should be now, in my opinion. But it also, that's how it should be in Star Trek, because, you know, they're umpteen thousand years in the it should be a situation where, you know, these battles have been fought, you know, and if we're going to make an observation about people not being able to live as their true selves, it should be historically. And I felt like Starfleet, Star Trek, Starfleet Academy did that. I felt like they did it better than any of the other, you know, modern era Star Trek shows. And I would even include Picard in that, because Picard really didn't tell this kind of story. It was really more of action reunion, you know, telling, you know, one-off stories. So I really enjoyed it. I certainly had some points where I was irritated by Holly Hunter's character, but I loved her performance. Really enjoyed Paul Giamatti. I thought he was a great,
you know. I absolutely love Holly Hunter's species, because when I'm watching it, I look at it as like, you know, she reminds me of this other actress. And then I realized, oh, that is the actress that played that same species in Strange New Worlds. But like you, I looked at the series initially and I'm like, this is not going to be for me. Mm-hmm. It is in the far future era that I don't care for.
Same.
That whole After the Burn stuff.
Yeah.
Everything about it looked like it was going to be like a CW version of Star Trek.
Exactly. That's exactly what it looked like.
It's an era I hate. It's not going to have any of the stuff I love. And then they cast the Doctor on there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I'll give the show an episode. And it won me over because it was just solid sci-fi.
And I loved the episode where the AI cadet, and I forget her name, Sam.
Yeah.
You know, she is glitching and whatnot. And from the jump on, there's been almost sort of a coldness between the Doctor and her. And you're like, what the hell is that all? Well, we find out in that episode. And it calls back, such that there is a clip in the show, it calls back to an episode of Voyager where the Doctor had a holographic family. And I love that episode of Voyager. And I loved that episode of Starfleet Academy. It was so well written. It was so well connected. It told a marvelous story about what's the impact of a person who lives hundreds, even thousands of years, you know, when all the people around him die. You know, what's the impact on that person, and how do they cope with that emotionally? I love that story.
The other thing I loved when you're dealing with emotional stories, the Deep Space Nine episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I loved how the focus, it was all about what happened to Benjamin Sisko was the premise they gave, but that wasn't the focus.
Yeah.
The focus is what happened to Jake Sisko.
Yeah.
What happened to the people that, you know, Benjamin Sisko left behind when he went off to become a prophet. And I didn't realize that was a story I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But they did it so well. And bringing back the actor that played Jake, seeing him as an adult, learning what his life was about. And it wasn't one of those, he went on to do huge universe changing things, but he had a life.
Yeah.
And
it was great seeing Sirach Lofton. You know, it was great, you know, getting to see how Deep Space Nine was appreciated, you know, by the Starfleet Academy, you know, cadets and in that part of the universe, and just to be able to visit again. And it was still telling new story while also respecting what came before. And again, I just go back to, this is what happens when you put people in the writer's room, understand the material they're working.
Yeah.
They're familiar with the material.
The biggest shock for me was the finale, that it even was an episode. Because you and I both watched the episode before the finale, and we thought it was the finale, because that's how shows tend to end, is huge cliffhanger, and it was such a big moment that felt like a season finale, and then we get the actual finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I really enjoyed Starfleet Academy. I will somehow watch the second season and hope that they do the same thing, you know, have the same kinds of storytelling success. But man, it breaks my heart that, you know, there won't be, we're going to go through another fallow. There is no Star Trek on. I hope that Skydance makes some good decisions. I know that they've got their creative team already on crafting a new script. There have been so many scripts for the next Star Trek movie. Paul, between you and me, I think they are leaving money in the street, not making the Quentin Tarantino Star Trek. I would be in production on that today. I would use that as a palate cleanser before I launched my new Star Trek franchise. I would absolutely.
Use it now. We're going to do it now while they have nothing tied to an overall continuity.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to see Quentin Tarantino's take on Star Trek. And let him just be as Quentin as he needs to be. Let him show as many naked bare feet as he needs to show. Do it.
Yep.
I mean, it is a license to print money, that movie. And it is crazy to me that they, you know, if you don't have a plan, and nobody does, that is exactly why there hasn't been Star Trek in so long, right? Nobody's got a plan. So if no one's got a plan, let an auteur come in and make a Star Trek movie, because it's not going to break anything. They're going to come in and it's actually going to make people, and if people love it, you can make another one. If they don't love it, you go make the thing that you're going to make.
Holly Hunter's character really showed us that you can have feet in Star Trek.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, I'm not encouraged by the moves Skydance is making in the Star Trek space. It concerns me about what they'll do with the DC properties now that they're going to own those. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting for these next few years, seeing what they do. But yeah, I mean, we do know we do have at least one more season of Strange New Worlds, and there's talk of the reboot, right, of the original with the new cast. But I don't know, guys.
I would be surprised that there's going to be. I don't think there's going to be any new Star Trek on TV for at least 5 years. That would be my guess. I think that, you know, they're going to let, you know, the Strange New Worlds play out. They're going to let Starfleet Academy play out. And then they'll, my guess is after that, they'll start talking new Star Trek.
Yeah.
You guys done talking about TV and movies?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we should be talking about comic books, gentlemen, because this week let me clarify. It's been a few weeks since we've podcasted. So we've got a Superman catch up. But before we hop into that, I want to tell you all, I went to a comic shop this week.
Whoa.
Yeah. I went to Comic City in Chesterfield, Michigan. And I will say it was, so they open up at, so I wanted to make sure I was there at opening. I don't, you know, I've never been to this one. And this week was a big comic release. So I wanted to make sure I got there when they opened. They opened at 11. I got there a few minutes early and they were already open. So I'm like, oh, cool. Even better. And so I walk in, it's clean, it's organized, they have new books. So their organization is that new books are amongst the regular comic books, but they have a sign that says new this week on them. So you don't have to go to like the new section, you have to go to S for the new issue of Superman, and it'll be marked as new this week, a little sign. And so I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. But they had a large section of all the variant covers of Superman, Spider-Man this week. And so and she's like, you can buy as many covers as you want, but you can only have one of each cover. I'm like, okay. So I picked it up. I picked up the Arthur Adams cover because they've got like 30 covers for this damn book. But I picked up the Arthur Adams cover. And gentlemen, I really enjoyed this book. Superman, Spider-Man. So the main story is by Mark Waid and Jorge Jimenez. And it's just a fun little Superman, Spider-Man book, you know, core concept of the characters tied together. And then they've got a ton of backup features, including Lois Lane and Mary Jane, Superboy Prime and Amazing Spider-Man, Superboy and Spider-Man 2099, Jimmy Olsen and Carnage, John Kent and Ben Parker, Daily Planet and the Daily Bugle, and Power Girl and the Punisher, all by superstar creative teams. It is a very, very fun book. You know, highly recommend checking it out.
How many pages?
You know, I don't know, but it's definitely an oversized book. Probably 64 pages, maybe.
Okay. And how much was the cover price?
$8.99.
Okay.
So this is the first of two. So, you know, just like Deadpool's Batman, there is a DC publication and a Marvel publication. They used to do this, you know, back in the 90s too, or early 2000s. Yeah, yeah. So this is the DC version. The Marvel version is Spider-Man Superman, which features, which comes out next month in April. And the lead story there is by Brad Meltzer and Pepe Larraz. You know, and that also has a bunch of backup features as well. So, I mean, it is definitely a fun book. Highly recommend checking it out. It'll probably, you know, just like the other one, it'll be released digitally at some point. But I just couldn't wait. You know, this is one I wanted to check out. And it is good to have a comic shop local for anything that you specifically do need. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Comic City impressed me. You know, it is far, far different than some of my previous bad comic shop experiences. No one was eating raw hot dogs behind the counter or taking naps. The organization was clean. Wow. I will say one thing they do, which is interesting, is I actually called when I first moved here about Deadpool Batman. And she was like, oh, how old is that book? I'm like, oh, it's a few months old. And she's like, actually, we take books off the shelves after a month.
Good for them.
From an organization standpoint, now what do they do with them? I have no idea. but you know, it helps keep the store very organized and from getting cluttered.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I checked it out. Superman, Spider-Man out now in comic shops, and check it out. But yeah, there were other Superman books.
So Paul, before we jump to the other books, I initially was thinking I was just going to boycott the book because I am still angry that these are going so long before going digitally. Mostly because I don't want physical books, but it's Superman, Spider-Man. I couldn't. So I have ordered it online and I'm just waiting for my copy to arrive.
Yes. We'll talk about it when you get it.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not buying it until it hits digital. I've got no use for it until it goes to a hardcover. I'll buy it then, but I don't need a floppy.
No, so. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I do. And if it wasn't two of my favorite comic characters of all time, mm-hmm. I'd probably pass on it too, but this one was just one I was super excited about, and the creative team and all that stuff. Like, I just couldn't wait.
My thing is, I came to the realization years ago, thing, and so I trimmed my comic book collection down to those comics that mean something to me, as mm-hmm. opposed to just having them. And I don't have any more space to floppies. Just don't. You know, I prefer having my comics digitally because I can take them everywhere I go.
Yeah, and, totally you know, agree.
So we've
all moved to digital comics, you know, in this podcast over since we started. Gosh, I remember the days of the physical comics, you know, when we first started this podcast. So, you know, for what it's
but
worth,
I that, also, that was
a, go ahead.
Go, I'm just going to say I understand having items that are only available in the comic shop to be able to drive business to the comic shop because that
absolutely
supports the comic companies. I get that. I just wish that they were a little more transparent about what the embargo is, you know, what that hold period is, you know, kind of like movies, right? You know, is it 45 days? Is it 120? You know, what is it? Just so that we know. I hate that they kind of keep it secret and, you know, that it might never and that concerns me. And I don't think they ought to do that. I think that they're pitting, you know, two of their customer bases against one another because there are myself who are hardcore digital and they're only going to buy digital, or they'll buy it collected. It frustrates me. I think that they are hurting one aspect of their customer base you know, in favor of the other. And I just, that bothers me.
Yeah, no, I do. I don't disagree. And I just think, in addition to being more communicative about it, I think they've got to just shorten the time frame. Yeah. You know, an exclusivity window should probably, especially in the space of comic shops, probably not last more than a month. I think the reason that the Deadpool Batman one lasted so long, and this one probably will, is that they kept reprinting the book and reprints kept selling out. You know, the second
print sold out,
the third print. So, like, why release it to digital while the printings are still selling out? And I think that's what it is. They're waiting until it slows down.
If your movie is still selling tickets, you know, you're going to keep it in theaters as long as you can. Right. I get that. I just wish they'd be a little bit more transparent. Like, our plan is, you know, 120 days unless X happens. And then tell us, you know, because it went back for a seventh printing, we're going to keep it at comic stores a little bit longer. You know, I get that.
They lost some purchases in me because I will not buy any of the Batman Deadpool.
Yeah.
I broke down and did this one because Superman and Spider-Man are my two favorite comic characters.
Yeah.
And I read, you know, all of the back material that was going to be in them. The side stories are ones I really want as well. So I gave in, but I didn't on Batman Deadpool. And I don't
both of those books,
on Batman, any Deadpool, of the others.
Yeah, and Deadpool Batman are available digitally now. I will say, in both situations, the backup features are better than the main feature, but one of them's written by Grant Morrison with art by Dan Mora, and one of them's written by Zeb Wells with art by Gray Capullo. The Zeb Wells book is much better, as you would imagine, than the Grant Morrison one. but, you know, I don't... Deadpool, for me, only works in the movies.
Agreed.
Because I just can't stand a Deadpool comic.
Same.
I'm not that hardcore about it, but it doesn't work with Batman for me.
Yeah,
that that's not a mashup I want to see.
Same. Yeah. Same. So let me ask you, who is the matchup? Who is the matchup you'd want to see with Batman? Because I could care less about Deadpool. For me, I like Captain America.
Yeah.
Batman Captain America would be good. I think Batman Moon Knight could be really interesting as well.
Or Batman Daredevil.
Yeah, I was thinking Batman Daredevil because Daredevil is prevalent right now with the TV show. Because, like, Batman Moon Knight, as much as I love the idea and would want to see it, I don't think it's going to sell copies right away because, you know, there's no Moon Knight in the world, that, you know, in the media right now, because the Oscar Isaac show isn't going. But, like, Deadpool's still relevant as far as the general audience. But, I mean, I think Batman pairs well with almost any Marvel character except Deadpool, frankly. You know, Batman, Iron Man, you know, you got the billionaire angle. Batman, Captain America would be great. Batman, Moon Knight, Batman, Daredevil. Batman, Spider-Man was excellent. Batman, Punisher was excellent. Like, I think Batman pairs well with most characters, just not Deadpool, unfortunately. But, you know, you know, since we're talking about Deadpool, we're going to have a Superman catch up this week. I kind of want to talk a little bit about the Deadpooling of Superboy Prime. So one of the books that came out this week was Joshua Williamson and Dan Mora's Superman number 36, where, you know, what I mean by Deadpooling is Superboy Prime very much breaks the fourth wall. He punches his way through different realities. He comes from the real world, right? So he has this awareness that he is literally inside the world of a comic book right now. And I
hate that that's called Deadpooling when She-Hulk did it first.
She-Hulking, whatever you want to call it. But yes, fair point. But I will say, I really don't like fourth wall breaking in comics. I think it's stupid. Same. But
I don't mind it in a comedy book. I don't mind it
in a Mad magazine
you know, it was fine for Howard the Duck. It was fine for Ambush Bug. Those kinds of, you know, where you're buying it for comedy, that's fine. I don't care for it in, you know, Prime is not a comedy book, right? And Superman Unlimited, is not a comedy book. And so it bugs me that he breaks the fourth wall. It bugs me that he's literally breaking the frames of reality, you know, to move across the page. It frustrates me. I like that.
You know what bugged me in the book? His catchphrase. Every time he says it's prime time, it pissed me off because it's like it's rubbing it in my face that the Malibu universe doesn't exist anymore.
So did you guys really not like Superman issue 36?
I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah,
I loved it, Aaron. I really went in expecting to hate it, and I don't know what, but it just, I was like, wow, I actually like this book. I like that Superboy, you know, that Superboy Prime acknowledges, hey, I look like a young Clark Kent, got to figure out a secret identity that doesn't involve me working at the Daily Planet. He ends up at a comic shop. Like, it just makes sense. Like, I genuinely enjoyed this book. It felt more so than the Deadpooling of it. Honestly, it felt a little Invincible to me.
I hated, you know, the first half of the book, Paul. So like, I hated the, you know, I'm not your grandpa's Superman and all of that stuff, as well as the everything when he was on the Justice League satellite, all of that. And
where the women were thirsty for him.
Yeah, I enjoyed the interactions with Lois. And then when it really hooked me was when he got the job at the comic book store.
I did like the job at the comic book store thing.
Yeah, and then he starts to like get that. He gets his own crappy apartment, and it's like I really enjoyed that part. And yeah, I enjoy that he's trying to be better, but that he's really a psychopath.
I just love that everyone's willing to look past the fact that he's a mass murderer, you know, that he, you know, has done horrible, horrible things, and now he's okay. He's turned over a new leaf, and we're just going to let him wander free.
Well, I thought they were going to deal with that a little bit when Mr. Terrific makes the comment about how one thing he has going for him is that the universe and timelines have been reset a couple times.
Right.
I thought they were going to say nobody remembered it, but immediately after that, he talks about how everyone remembers it.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, you know, I'm looking at something, you know, like Captain Atom, Hal Jordan, Wally West. To be fair, they've all done very horrible things.
Sure.
And people have forgiven them. I'm not saying Superboy Prime is worthy of forgiveness, but like it is not untold that or unheard of that that's the scenario amongst these heroes.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I prefer him as a villain. I'm not sure we need another Superman character wandering around. Just
agreed.
Saying.
I mean, I get it during the reign of the Superboys, and you know, like, so there are three books that in this reign of the Superboys that have come out of DC KO, right? Superman is quote unquote missing. You know, he's gone to he'll be back. Even Lois is like he'll literally be back. So she's doing fine. But you know, we've got these Superboy books. So like Action Comics is kind of focused on literally young Clark Kent. And we're kind of dealing with a little bit of time travel there. Superman Unlimited, we've got more time travel in that's this book is focused on Jonathan Kent. However, it seems like it might be the adventures of current Jonathan Kent, aged up Jonathan Kent, and a Jonathan Kent who has been pulled out of time when he was still young and trapped on the volcano planet by Uberman?
Yes.
Yeah, by Uberman, you know, had him trapped on that volcano planet, and he's been pulled out of time by like a fourth dimensional imp or something like that. So, you know, I will say, I kind of enjoyed all three of these books. I don't know. It brought me back to a time where, for me, I think I enjoyed them because it brought me back to like this, like anything is possible era of Superman, mm-hmm. you know, like the reign of the Superman, right? We had all these different super characters, each with their own tales, and you know, it's building up to something. And so I don't know, like I was excited about the prospects of it, but go ahead, Aaron. It sounds like you had issues.
Well, I'll finish my comments about 1096. Say that I just really didn't enjoy this book as much as I love Dan Mora's art in it.
Superman 36.
Yeah, Superman 36. Sorry. As much as I love Dan Mora's and, I did enjoy Prime getting the job at the comic book shop, just about everything else in the book irritated. I'm still going to pick it up because, you know, Superman. But I'm hoping that my opinion turns around. I'm willing to be convinced this will be a story I like. But I was not a fan of Superman 36. Jumping into reenaction 1096 now.
Yeah.
So Action Comics 1096, which features just making sure
Booster Gold.
Our good friend Booster Gold. Hot off the out of the pages of KO, where Booster Gold was possessed by Darkseid. So Action Comics 1096 has our young Kent wandering around. We get to see interact with Lana Lang's dad a little bit. I gotta tell you, I wasn't really wild about this book either. There were things I liked about it, but it was not a home run. I did really like the page where Superboy is flying and his reflection showing in the skyscraper. Nicely drawn panel. But this one didn't do a whole lot for me until the end, where you get to see our modern come barging out of what appears to be a boom tube. Perhaps I'm wrong about that. You get Booster Gold, Martian Manhunter. I just really feel like there could be some energy, some kismet, some spark between Superboy and Mary Marvel. Wouldn't that be great? Anyway.
I would actually really love that story.
Yeah, same. Hard same. But
I agree with you. I mean, I think the book was fine, but the ending sets up something that I found interesting.
Yeah. So I'll be honest, who's the Transformer at the end of the book? Do we know who or what that is?
No.
Is that
a new character?
I think it's a new character. Okay. I didn't care for the design of it. It looked like, and here's generic robot character.
Yeah, he looked like Rom the Space Knight to me, but orange.
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I was ready to drop the book. Like, I really had enjoyed the early Superboy stories, but I felt like that was a nice, let's jump back, tell a story arc, and then get back to normal stories.
Yep.
And I feel like it had just gone on a bit long now. Except the setup for this issue. Once Booster showed up and you get back to, like, I don't know why, but that era of Superboy at this point, I kind of only want stories with the Legion and things that tie to the future now.
Mm-hmm.
And so Booster and them showing up means I'm still on board for a little bit longer.
Yeah, that really kind of jazzed me as well. I was like, okay, let's infuse some new blood in this. You know, I kind of dug that.
I wonder if this has been the plan the whole time, right? Because, like, I felt it odd that they were focusing on Superboy from a different time to begin with. And then I'm wondering if this was always the plan to somehow incorporate that young Superman into present day storytelling as part of this Reign of the Superboys.
Well, you know, it's reminiscent of what Bendis did with the X-Men, right? Where he brought the original class of the X-Men into modern day Marvel.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know, it is very reminiscent of that to me. And I'll be honest, I loved that storyline. You know, I enjoyed seeing those 60s era characters, you know, in the regular 616. I thought that was a lot of fun. So I'm still in on Action Comics. It did not thrill or excite me until we got to like the last page or two. Into Superman Unlimited. I'm the only one a regular reader of Superman Unlimited, and I've really liked what Dan Slott's doing. I hated about 75% of this comic book.
Maybe the fourth dimensional imp stuff. Like I will say I don't care for that either. I generally don't like Mr. Mixapitlick stories or whatever.
I would have preferred Mr. Mixelplick or whatever, however you this guy.
Mr. Ziz, whatever his, you know, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, I didn't care. I didn't care for made-up villain, I don't care. To give John his own, you know, eighth dimensional imp adversary. And I just thought he was poorly designed. And that's what just thought he was poorly designed. He was not an interesting character to me. I really enjoyed summary pages, John's backstory. I thought those were excellently done. In fact, I got super excited. I get excited anytime I see this. When we get to see the Superman family in redesigned suits, with everybody there, I love that crowd, right? So I always get excited when I see that. And I really enjoyed, this is a situation where the character travels out guy trapped to, you know, end his arch nemesis, Jonathan, son of Superman, and winds up creating, you know, the guy who's going to put an end to him. You know, he winds up creating, never realized that Jonathan Kent actually becomes Tomorrow Man. But that's what happens in this book. Spoilers, by the way. Let me tell you, I like Tomorrow Man. I like the design of it. I like it to harken back to the Kandorian and Nightwing stories, which I've always enjoyed. You know, there seems to be a design element there for Tomorrow Man. I dug it. I dug it. And I also, you know, really liked, you know, we're going to pull 9-year-old Jonathan Kent out of time and have him be sidekick to Tomorrow. I think that sounds fun. And I'm here for it. And I trust Dan Slott to tell this story. So while I didn't enjoy the majority of this book, I really like where it is going. And I'm here.
You know, it's funny because I think we've described all three books similarly. Uh-huh. In that all three of them have established a storyline that we're interested in seeing where it goes, even if this first issue didn't necessarily hit fire on all cylinders.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see where the Reign of the Superboys goes next.
Wayne, did you not pick up Superman Unlimited?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I you were quiet, so I assumed that you hadn't. Well, I think it's super interesting. I love the Tomorrow. I think he looks really cool. I like him. I like him a lot. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, from DC Comics, we have the latest issues of Absolute Superman, Batman, Matt Fraction's Batman story continues. We have the 50th issue of Batman Superman from Mark Waid and Dan Mora on art. Wow. I'm shocked this book is still being published, but, you know, I guess it still does well. We also have Bizarro Year None, which is a new Kevin Smith written DC book about really? Bizarro. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it could go either way.
I hope they have the whole series already turned in.
Yeah, fair point. I think it's a one-shot or a graphic novel, so I could be wrong on that. From Marvel Comics, we have a new relaunch of Daredevil, the latest volume of Daredevil, this one written by Stephanie Phillips with Lee Garbett on art. So we'll see if that one's worth checking out. It feels like there's a new Daredevil number one every year or two.
It does. They renumber all the time. Every time they change up creative teams.
Yeah. There's also the 50th anniversary special of the Eternals, which features an all-star creative team. Including,
did you say 15th or 50th?
50th anniversary. Of the Eternals. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So they've got a, you know, big anniversary book, big anniversary one shot of the Eternals. And from Image Comics, we have Ghost Machine, the official guidebook of Ghost Machine. So this is kind of an homage to old school guidebooks for Marvel and DC and stuff like that. This volume goes into the unnamed characters. So the characters that are tied to Geiger, Junkyard Joe, and Redcoat, kind of the guidebook of those characters from Jeff Johns' Ghost Machine.
Very good. Well, we didn't talk about it. Have any of y'all watched Daredevil this week? The first episode?
Yes, I did.
I have not yet. We won't lengthen the podcast by giving reviews, but I thought it was a good first episode.
It was a strong first episode. And next, I hear episode 2 is a bit slow, but episode 3 is where it kicks off into high gear. So actually this coming week, episodes 2 and 3 release simultaneously. You know how we always say, like, if two episodes come out at the same time, it's because the first episode isn't good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess in the case of Daredevil, they knew the second episode was the weak spot, so they're releasing 2 and 3 together. So maybe next week we'll do a Daredevil catch up.
Sounds good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. We want to know what you think about all the TV. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. We use your comments on the show. A valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey guys, thanks for talking to me this week about all Superman. Or Supers Man. Maybe that's the plural.
Supermen's? The Supers, I feel like it's Supermen's.
No, I think it's the Supers Man.
I don't know that that's true.
I think you'll find grammatically that's correct.
Okay. I'll look it up after the podcast.
Okay. Get out your Harbrus College Handbook And you'll find that it specifically references that you should use comma before the and in a series. Thus the Oxford comma. And yes, that the plural of Superman is Super's Man.
I think it's just the men super. Yeah.
No, you're wrong.
All right, we'll catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.